Okay, so we can just start today with a little bit more than 10 minutes of Shamatha, and then I'll share some advice from my side of the meditation. So we can just find ourselves a good comfortable seat. And with an attitude of kindness towards ourselves, we just establish some relaxation for the body and some stillness. And then after some time we try to establish some calmness and stillness for the mind as well, by being with the breath. And the breath only. Okay, since this is the last session, I'd like to share a few things as a practitioner. I'm not a teacher, but I've been practicing for a while, and so maybe sharing some experiences from one practitioner to another. Maybe some of you haven't had the mind as the object before this course, I'm not sure. Which can be a little bit more challenging. But for some people it's they tap into that, having that mind as the object more naturally. But if you're like me, I found it quite difficult actually in the beginning, and I wasn't so interested in using that as the object. So, but for me, I was more focused on using the breath in different ways, especially in the nose area. And for me, it came like after some time of that practice, I sort of naturally shifted to having the mind as the object. So for me, it was more like a natural shift. I wasn't really, like I said, interested in because I found it so abstract that I couldn't really know what to actually focus on until I practiced single-pointedly on the breath for that amount of time, that I naturally started to experience more clarity and more space, and realizing, this is the mind, this is the space, and there is so much space here, you know. So for me, it came sort of naturally. So if this is the case for you, that you find it quite difficult having the mind, just focus on the breath, having the breath as the basis. And then basically see what happens, I would say. It's a bit like Alan Wallace says in his book as well. You keep on doing the breath practice until you gain that clarity and that space. And then... and you naturally shift to the mind. But it's not always like that either. It's sometimes the mind is very busy, and sometimes periods in life I still find it quite difficult to tune into the mind as the object. So the breath is just seeing the breath as the basis. And then of course being aware of the awareness that objectless shamatha, it's even more abstract. But there's been people coming here and they haven't meditated so much before, and I remember one guy especially, he felt he just went straight into the awareness of awareness. That was completely natural for him. And if this is the case, that's great. And if this is the case with you, that you have the mind as the object, as something that really works for you, then just be grateful. Because this is a very... I think it's a very helpful way to deal or to meditate in everyday life as well, because it's very helpful, because you really get to know the mind and you get to really see your emotions or thoughts coming up. Yes?
Mind as an object and awareness as an object have no concept to make difference. Could you...
Which one? You said the awareness of awareness.
Mind and awareness. Is there a difference?
The main difference is that you are not, when you're having the awareness as the practice, or just being aware of being aware, you don't really observe thoughts or activity or anything coming up. You just go back over and over again to just being aware, basically. So this is the main thing. So, for example, when using the breath, you just let go of the thoughts. You don't really take notice of them. They come, you accept them, but you pay no further attention. But when shifting to the mind, you're actually starting to observe the activity. But then again, going to the awareness of awareness, you go back to just letting the thoughts go. And just let them dissolve, because you're not really interested. So I would say that would be the main difference. Yes.
I just wondered, have your views on the recordings that the guided meditation. Initially, when I started playing them, they were a very good anchor. But then slowly, there is also a tendency to play them again and again. And suddenly, you get kind of hooked on to the recordings, more especially on the Vipassana side. So, is that a natural thing, or is that to be avoided?
What would be the natural thing you said to get hooked?
I mean, to start with, for example, we've done meditations here, and you've been guiding the meditations.
Mm-hmm.
And we have recordings now. We take them back and we can simulate the experience. But then slowly that simulation, you start getting attached to that stimulation.
Mm. Okay.
So it's very difficult to leave those recordings and then do it completely on your own.
You mean the actual, for example, the emptiness meditations, the Vipassana that we do here now? I think the main goal is to be able to do the Vipassana by yourself and to be able to analyze and investigate any kind of object by yourself. And it depends. I mean, I still appreciate guided meditations, definitely, by being guided by somebody. It's such a luxury, I feel, because it's so much easier in a way. But the Vipassana part, it depends. I mean, if I go into in a Vipassana retreat, for example, not necessarily the Guenca, but in different retreats, then this Vipassana is more... It's not so structured in a way, in a sense. You can do the four applications of mindfulness, the path of purification, for example, the Mahasi tradition and so on, in the Theravada. But for me, Vipassana is more, in a way, more playful, in a way. I sit down and when I really get into... the mind, like I get into a deeper state of meditation, using the shamatha, of course, then I just see what spontaneously arises within the mind. If I sometimes just something comes up and I start to like think about impermanence, for example, and this comes very strong for me in the meditation for some reason, then I really use that to go into and investigate that more in a non-conceptual way, and to see what spontaneously arises, basically, and I start investigating in that, and sometimes nothing comes up and I just focus on the breath. But again, and the emptiness, I think it's a bit similar with that. Once you start to get the concept, you can start to be a little bit playful and be creative in the meditation as well. But I think for a long time, and I think always, I think it's I will appreciate having guided meditations and listening to them on the CD or audio files and download from the internet and so on. So I think both ways, it's so sometimes try just to sit down and using the shamatha and see what spontaneously arises after some time. And also I think eyes closed and eyes open, it's also I think an interesting point, because again, sometimes the mind is very busy and I feel like I have to close my eyes more to be able to focus more, but sometimes my mind is more clear and I really appreciate having the eyes open. Because it's more like you draw down the barrier between the inner and outer world. I think that's very helpful, especially while focusing on the mind, having the mind as the object. I think it's it gets, and especially the awareness of awareness, I think it's, for me, it's almost impossible to have my eyes closed and focus on the, on that awareness, because awareness is something out here in this world, and just being inside my world, it doesn't really work like that for me. And also, I think after some time, when you get a good foundation of the shamatha practice, I think it's very, very helpful to having the eyes open, because it really allows you, and you really get used to being able to focus on the breath or the mind anywhere. Sitting on a bus from Delhi to Pushkar, for example, it's like and just staring out the window and being fully aware of the breath. I think it's a very helpful way to because then you can really meditate anywhere. You're not really, and you're getting used to not being having the eyes being distracted and follow different objects and so forth. So in everyday mindfulness meditation, I think for that reason, I think trying to have the eyes open is very, very helpful. So of course we're sitting here in this gompa here in Tushita, and we have more or less perfect conditions because it's silence and it's very structured and everything, which is, I think, necessary to create a good basis and a good foundation for meditation. But not to get too used to these perfect conditions, because then it's going to be quite difficult to meditate when you are in the so-called everyday life, or when you're sitting in a guest house and you have a really noisy neighbor, somebody, you know, in India here, it's like putting on the radio at 5 o'clock in the morning, like blasting, and so it's I start to really appreciate that, because it gives me a little bit of a challenge to accept that, because again, meditation is not about sitting in perfect silence in perfect conditions. It's the for me, meditation, the main purpose is to bring it out into your everyday life and to be able to deal with situations in various ways. Because here, nobody's going to upset you sitting here. Maybe somebody who's coughing, or, but it doesn't happen that much, does it? I think it's very, very... I was going to say something. You don't really get those challenges in these perfect conditions. So be happy when somebody tries to interrupt your meditation somewhere, because see, that's a great opportunity to improve your meditation, and therefore be able to deal with life, you know, because when working 9 to 5 or having a family, and that's a completely different situation than sitting in a gompa in Tushita. So it's two different things. And then the practical things of, I'm sure all of you are meditating, or you have been meditating for a while, and you might know that continuity is the key word to improving and to developing in shamatha, to do it every day. I think a good, and sometimes we find excuses of not being able, we say, oh, it's not possible to meditate because I live with, have some flatmates or roommates, or my life is so busy anyway. But we can really find the time, you know, waking up before everybody wakes up and do 20 minutes of shamatha. It's definitely possible. And then maybe in the evening when everybody's gone to bed. It's just a matter of being motivated and perhaps being a bit structured. So start the day with that. And I think the four opponent powers, or just reflecting on the day and see what was good and see what was negative during the day, I think it helps. Because then you go to sleep and you sort of have processed all that. I feel also when going to sleep, if my mind is still very busy, I really find just lying in the corpse asana and just focusing, first maybe just observing the mind, just watching the mind, just like we do here, having that as the object, and then, or focusing on the breath, just to settle the mind down. That really helps as well. And I see no contradiction in using the breath while in bed, actually. It sounds like, oh, you shouldn't do that because you might associate the mindfulness or the breath with sleeping. But it depends on how you... In my opinion, I haven't seen any problems with that. So I think it's a very good way to calm the mind down before going to sleep as well. Continuity, and for me that helps so much to have a sort of a structured getting up at a certain time, going to bed at a certain time, and a good night's sleep, I think, for me is the best way to have a proper meditation, to have a meditation of a good quality. That's very important for me. Because meditation is about habituate, create habits to come back. I think the body and mind feels very, very good. It's a very kind way to live, I think, to much kindness towards yourself. And one thing I found interesting too about, especially if you're living with somebody, with a partner or with a family, it's so helpful not to talk so much in the morning when you wake up. And if you both are practicing, that's great to sit down together, because then you motivate or encourage each other, and not so much, and just make the agreement of not talking, because it can make such a difference. That's what I realized. And maybe during breakfast or after breakfast, start talking. You don't have to solve the world's problems, you know, like as soon as you wake up. It's a very, very kind way to start a day, I feel. And if we are sincere about this practice, then we feel like we want, if this feels like this is something dear to us, meditation, and we want to develop. I think a key word here is also having no expectations. Of course, we might have some wishes or expecting from ourselves that we should do the practice, that we should sit down. And I think that's great. But once we're actually sitting down, then we really have to leave all expectations from achieving something or looking for results in the meditation. Because that means you're not really in the present moment. You're just waiting for something to happen, basically. So, just sitting down, I mean, that's the result enough. You have really accomplished something of just actually sitting down and making a decision to meditate. I think that's an amazing result in itself. And then you can just, when you're actually sitting down, you just leave all that. Just leave any kind of expecting to see the blue light or green light or to whatever it might be. Because that's the whole practice, isn't it? Just to be in the present, just to be with the object, whatever it is. And not pushing oneself too much. I usually say the slowest way is the quickest way. To do something thoroughly, to have a great basis, a good foundation. And then slowly but thoroughly and sincerely, I think that's the quickest way. Trying to push myself too much, it's like, okay, by November I should have reached stage 5 in the shamatha. You know, it's not a very kind way to be with yourself or to deal with yourself. So just let it come. And also when you do starting to feel that you're developing, or you might get tastes, like. Because this is how, especially in retreats, you know, you might get a taste of these higher stages, and that can be so tasty. It can be so, the ego can really like start to grasp, you know, and it's because it's just so tasty. And perhaps this is when some real challenges begins, because then you start comparing, you know. You probably had this experience yourselves. And you just want to go back to that place over and over again. So this is definitely, you're starting to create all these expectations of wanting to go back there again and again. And it's so I think it's very important not to compare sessions at all. Just it's like the Zen master Suzuki, he said in his book, Zen mind, the beginner's mind, Zen mind. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. To always have a beginner's mind, just to feel that you have never meditated before when you're sitting down, and just see what happens. I think that's a very, very good way. And also when you're struggling, motivation could be when you feel like you're not, when days are much more tough. I think this is really the way, this is really an opportunity to develop, because now you really have to put more effort into it. So having that as a motivation, when you feel like your mind is very, very, very busy and it's so much more difficult to focus, just see that as, wow, okay, now I have the chance to really develop. Because if everything is just going smooth, you don't really develop that much, I think. So I think that could be a good motivation when you have those so-called bad sessions. So a bad session could actually be the best session, because then you really put extra effort, you put more discipline into it. And yeah, this could be a good motivation when things are tough. And again, I think it's very important to go into retreat every once in a while. Doing individual retreats, I think it's very difficult in the beginning. And going into retreats, I think Goenka Vipassana is a great way to really kickstart the practice again. Or the good thing about that, because they have centers all over, you know, it's very accessible. And I find it quite difficult to find proper longer retreats in the Mahayana communities, actually. Just finding on internet or finding different meditation groups in your hometown. I think retreats are really necessary as well if you want to develop. You can definitely develop to a certain point with the daily practice, but again, to get that in those retreats, you might get a taste, and that can be so inspiring to sort of get a glimpse of some deeper meditations that you might not be able to reach in the daily practice in an everyday life. And then, of course, trying out with individual retreats, starting with like a weekend retreat, for example, but just by yourself. And having, in my experience, it was very important to have a very detailed schedule the whole day, and using the clock, alarm clock, and especially if you do like a 3-4 days or 5 days or a week retreat by yourself, to have that discipline, because the schedule really gives you the discipline, and try not to drift off from that, because that's because here in the group retreat you don't have to think, you have the gong and you have the food and you have everything is just set for you. And this is so helpful. So you really have to be so much more disciplined during your own retreat. But having said that, I want to share a little bit of my experience. Last year I was doing a 2-month retreat up in the Sulukumba area in the Mount Everest region in Nepal. And I realized after a couple of weeks that my schedule didn't really work the way I thought it was going to work. So then, of course, you have to be a little bit more flexible and see what really works for you and adjust it a little bit. But I think in the beginning, at least, you really have to have a proper schedule and to know exactly what you're going to do on the specific sessions. So you really set up for morning session, it's like visualization or and shamatha, and then after breakfast you maybe you listen to some teachings or you read something and so on. So you're just having like very detailed session layout, outlines. And then after some time you start to feel like, no, this was too, you know, the theory didn't really work with the reality. And then you start slowly adjusting a little bit. And I think in the individual retreats, I think it's so important to be kind and gentle to yourself. Yet being disciplined, of course, but if you don't feel like doing a session, you shouldn't push yourself too much either. Somebody said, one of my teachers in Koppan said, you should have a happy mind while meditating. I think that's very, very important. Because you can definitely develop lung, like this meditation disorder, so to speak, or meditation disease, which is happening when you're pushing yourself too much, and the nervous system gets upset. And so this kindness and gentleness and softness towards oneself, I think it's so important. And if the schedule doesn't work, just adjust it a little bit. And yeah, that was any questions? We have a few more minutes for questions. Yes.
How much per week? I mean, what would be your? Can you say anything about that? I mean, how many hours per week?
Like how many hours per week? I would say more like how many. Per day, because it's good to establish a daily practice, because you might know that, you know, saving up everything for, you know, do 3 hours on Sunday, it doesn't really work.
Still on the weekends, you can do more.
Sure, yeah, definitely, it's individual, I guess, but a couple of, like, each session, 20-25 minutes in the morning, and then you can extend it if you feel like you have the time and it really works for you, that you can maintain the quality for longer than 25 minutes. That's great. That's really great. But maybe start with shorter sessions and then extend it. And then in the evening, 20-25 minutes as well. If you have the time in the weekend, it's depends, you know, how much you want to do it and how much you... Again, you can do, like, you can set up a little weekend retreat for yourself if you have the possibility. And do, you know, even 5-6 sessions per day. But yeah, it's more on a daily basis, I would say. Because in retreats also, you find that it's usually like 45 minutes a session. But that's retreat. I feel that's quite different, because again you have a different mindset, and you're not going to work, and you can really focus more and get more quality out of the session. But well, if 45 minutes works for you, you know, by yourself, that's great. But don't push it too much.
Would you recommend to do like complement?
Yeah, definitely, and yeah, sure. Tonglen is a great way. It's a quite simple way, and it's a very, I think, a very helpful and effective way to generate compassion. And that's also something you can do anywhere, anytime. That's a great way. Yeah, and also listen to audio files, you know, on the Four Immeasurables, for example. I think that's really great. Even though it's the same audio file that you listen to, you have a different mindset every day, so you might get a different taste or different experience from it, depending on your mood. So definitely combine a little bit. And in the evening, if you feel too tired to do the shamatha, you can, like I said, reflect over the day or do a compassion meditation like Tonglen. Especially if you got into a conflict with somebody during the day, I think it's very, very nice to try to generate that compassion and do a Tonglen practice on that person. But also the key point is to bring the mindfulness into daily life. Even though you're working, you can take some time off, just 5 minutes, and sit and just focus on the breath. Bring the mind back into the present, and always to constantly try to be aware of the present moment, of the breath or of the mind. And because then if we use that mindfulness throughout the day, I think the next time we sit down, it's going to improve. It's going to get better.
And just to comment, if you can mention something about the timing, because you mentioned that on the last session that we had last month, and it was very helpful for me, not to go, like if you set up a time, not to go over, when you go into meditation, with a happy state, but make sure that you still leave with a excitement of meditation and not just overdoing it. That was very helpful for me.
Thanks. That's a very good point. So actually, when you're sitting down in the session, you have the alarm clock. And you set it for 20, 25 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever works for you. And not to, even if it's a bit of a struggle, try to just sit throughout the whole time, regardless what happens. And also the opposite, if it's feel like, wow, what a nice flow, and then the alarm clock rings and you feel like, I want to sit a bit more here. This was so nice. But I think the problem with that is that you keep on meditating until the meditation sort of goes down, and then you're sort of leaving off with that last note of the meditation not being so good or so. So yeah, like you said, just stop regardless, because it's finishing off with a very good feeling. You get more hungry for the next session. It's very inspiring. Yeah, thanks. Yep.
Speaking of retreats, sometimes there is a tendency you have to schedule for a few days, and the first few days it goes well, and then you feel like it's easy, so you start squeezing in some more and more and more, and you're pushing too hard.
Mm-hmm.
How to avoid that situation where you... Because it's really easy to find yourself dropping into the mental imbalance place. Instead of, this is fairly easy, so I can do some more and more and more, but then you squeeze too hard.
Of course it can be, you can squeeze in a little bit more, but just be careful not doing it too quickly, because we all know that it really goes up and down. A few days it goes really well, and then you feel like, I'm really good, I should squeeze in some more. But just wait a little bit and see until you get really stable. It depends on how long the retreat is, of course. Just being a bit careful. And if something works really well, why change it? It's a bit like they say in the shamatha. If it isn't broke, why don't try to fix it? So it's So why? It's about this over-application thing, If something goes really well, why change it? So, but or you can say like, for the next retreat I'm going to do something different. But this retreat I'm going to stick with this because this is working really well for me. But if you do a 3-month retreat, you can after some time adjust it. But depends. Yeah.
I guess it's coming from the feeling of if something is going well and you want to make most of your time, but then you fall to the extreme of making too much of your time. So
exactly, it's a very good feeling, and it's very inspiring when things are going well, and that's So that's maybe a little bit of the danger as well, when you get that inspiration and you really want, you want more, you know. So, yeah, perhaps being a bit careful with that, definitely. Okay.